Morning. Today's daf in Erechin is Lamed Beis. We're in the final parak of the Masechta, final couple of dapim of the Masechta. Our discussion has turned to Bate Arichoma, buying a house in a walled city. But houses in a walled city in Eretz Yisrael are governed by a separate body of rules than general real estate in every Eretz Yisrael. Lands in Eretz Yisrael are going to be leased until the Yovel year. In the Yovel year, they return back to their ancestral owner. However, as we learned starting yesterday's daf, it really starts with a pasuk in the Torah and Parshas Bahar, Perek Chaf Hey. When a person sells a house in a walled city, so this house is going to be sold indefinitely, or at least potentially indefinitely. The house can be sold to somebody, and the owner has 1 year to buy back the property. If he does not buy back the property within 1 year, so then the sale will be a sale in perpetuity. And the original owner will no longer be able to buy back the house, and it will not go back to him in Yovel. And these are the basic halachas regarding Bate Arichoma. So we started the discussion yesterday with the Mishnah Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph, and we covered the entire daf yesterday, and we are now continuing with the discussion about Bate Arichoma on the bottom of Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. As you can easily imagine, where the owner has 1 year to buy it back, and if he does not do so within a year, so then it's going to go back to its original owner. I'm sorry, it's going to remain with the buyer forever. So you can imagine that as we are approaching the end of the year, the buyer is going to make himself unavailable, which is totally understandable from the perspective of the buyer. On the other hand, however, it really goes against the will of the owner and his right to buy it back if he so decides that he wants to. So what happens at the end of the year is you end up with a very awkward scenario, in which the owner is looking for the buyer because the owner wants to buy it back from the buyer. And the buyer is making himself unavailable for the owner. And so with this tension that exists between the seller and the buyer, so it ends up with the following. And this is how we open up our Mishnah in the beginning of today's daf. We're on the bottom of Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. Rishona Hayanitman Yom 12 Chodesh Kedei Sheyechal Lo. So originally, here's what the buyer would do. The buyer would go into hiding on the last day and the last opportunity where the owner could buy back his property. So he would be nitman. He would go into hiding. So because now, if he remains undiscovered for the end of the year, so now the house will remain his and his family's in perpetuity. And so good. He'd love to make himself unavailable to the seller. However, this, of course, goes against the will of the seller. The seller wants to buy it back. And so what do we do? What do we do under those circumstances? So Hitkin Hillel Shiyu Cholish Ma'osav L'Lishka. So Hillel made the following institution, that what you can now do is as follows. You, the original owner who wants to buy back your property, it's just that right now you cannot find the buyer because the buyer made himself unavailable. So what you could do is you take the money, deposit it in a Lishka, right? I'll call it escrow, but everyone understands it's not exactly escrow. But for the purposes of this, of just the basic understanding of the Mishnah. So you'll put it in escrow, v'yishover sedalas, and now you can break the door of a nechnas, and you can go back into your home, into what is your rightful home. Amosai shiirz dehalaz, yavo v'yitoz ma'osav. And then, when the buyer wants, in other words, the buyer now has been evicted out of his house. And when the buyer wants his money, he'll just simply head over to escrow, and he'll just simply pick up his money. So basically, there was a transference of money based on the takana of Hillel. Fascinating Mishnah, super interesting. Let's deal with the following question, which the Gemara basically is going to deal with. We have over here an interested buyer, meaning I'm talking about the seller, the original owner, right? Let's give him a name so that we can be even clearer about this. So let's call him Reuven. Reuven, who originally owned the house and was the original seller of the house. So this Reuven now wants to buy it back, and by right, he has the right to buy it back. It's just right now that Shimon's making everything difficult because Shimon right now is making himself unavailable because he doesn't want to see Reuven because he wants the house to be his in perpetuity. So we understand all the players. What the Gemara seeks to understand is the following. Hillel made a special takana, whereby only because of the special takana of Hillel, he made some sort of enactment, so therefore we could do this. We do what? What we described in the Mishnah. Have Reuven take the money in order to buy back his property, put the money in some sort of account, some sort of escrow account, and then at a later point in time, Shimon's going to come and collect the money. But in other words, the house now is going to be sold back to Reuven because Reuven wants to buy back the house. what exactly was the hurdle that Hillel had to jump in order to make this happen? Meaning, obviously, there was some sort of obstacle in the transaction, and Hillel, basically, because of the power of the Chachamim, the power of Beis Din, and when it comes to money, Beis Din has this kind of executive power, where Beis Din can make things happen when it comes to money, but he had to jump some sort of hurdle. What was the hurdle? What was the impediment that wouldn't allow for the transaction of the sale? And that's where we start with the Gemara's discussion. Amar Rav, the Gemara starts off, Mitakanaso Shehelal, Harei Zigitech Amanash Titni Limasayim Zuz. Vinasla, Midato, Megareshus Bakarcho, and Megareshus. Let's say you have the most unfortunate situation where a husband and wife are looking for a divorce. They're both looking for a divorce, but the husband wants something out of the divorce. So in other words, he's basically saying as follows, I will give you your get, but only on condition. And over here, it's very simple. His condition that he sets forth is very straightforward. Under the condition that you give me 200 zuz. Okay, right. Not a pleasant situation. Not a good way to go about it. But he attaches a condition to the get. And so let's consider the following now. Now, if she gives him the money and he willingly accepts the money, so now condition has been fulfilled, and now the get is going to be a valid get. However, bal karcho, let's say he's really not interested in the divorce. Maybe the reason why he attached such a stipulation to the get is because really he doesn't want a divorce. And so she's there and she's totally in favor of the divorce, and she hands him the money. So in other words, he gave her a get, and she hands him the money, and she did so, however, bal karcho against his will. So, basically, this is what we call in halacha nesina bal karcho, giving somebody money against their will. Would that or would that not work? Now, it sounds like as follows. Let's go back to our Mishnah. You see, in the Mishnah, we have Reuven who wants to buy back his property. And so now, as far as he's concerned, so he is willing. However, Shimon, on the other hand, does not want to sell back the property, and he's clearly unwilling. And so what we have in our Mishnah is a situation of Nesina Bal Karcho. And what the Gemara now is envisioning is the following. Just give me a moment. So what we have now is the following. So we have a situation in which Reuven wants to give the money to Shimon. Shimon clearly does not want the money. And so Reuven is ready to give the money. Shimon's ready not to accept the money. And so what the obstacle that Hillel had to jump is that in general, Nesina Bal Karcho doesn't work. And Hillel said, for the purposes of getting the land back to it, getting the house back to the original owner, so therefore Hillel made a special takana, which would then mean that by, in general, a Nesina Bal Karcho does not work. What's the...
But this is not an issue. I mean, Shimon doesn't have a choice in this matter. It's not, he doesn't have the option of whether to sell it. The Torah commands him to return the property.
The Torah does not command to return the property.
He's supposed to sell it back if the original one...
The Torah does not. The Torah just simply says that if the buyer buys back the property within a year, so then it remains by him.
But his buyback does not require the consent of the seller.
But you say that.
The Torah does say that.
Torah does not say that. Okay, there are only two psukim. We went through them yesterday.
So if that's the case, why does this still have to go into hiding? Just I don't want to sell it back.
Okay, good. So the Gemara is going to address your question. Good. So the Harezi Gitech Amanasha Titin Lamasayim Zuz Vanaslam Eidatim Megareshes Bakarcha and Megareshes. Good. So now if we see that Hillel is jumping over that hurdle specifically for the case of the sale of the house. So you see that the obstacle is that Nesina Bal Karcho is not considered Nesina. And that means then that in the event that the husband is refusing to accept the money, even though she is interested in giving him the money and she's handing him the money, but he basically says, I do not want the money. So that means that in general, the Nesina Bal Karcho is not going to be considered Nesina. Now the Gemara just simply spells out the point that we just made. By virtue of the fact that Hillel made a special dispensation in this particular case of Batei Rechoma, that means in general it doesn't work. In general, Nesina Bal Karcho is not considered a Nesina. Okay. So the Gemara is trying to arrive at that conclusion. The Gemara says that may not be the correct conclusion. Maskala Rav Papa Vitema Rav Ashi Vidilma Kisrech Lehilot Kunishlo Befanov. Abafanov Bein Medata Bein Shlo Bar Kocha Havya Matana. The Gemara says, look, it could very well be the Sina Bar Korcho is not the issue. It's not the issue. If I'm here and I'm giving you money, so that and even though you're not interested in taking the money, it could very well be that if I'm here and you're here and I'm handing you the money, and even though you're not a willing recipient, it could very well be that that would be a very good Nesina. It could be. And what's the obstacle that Hill had to jump over here? What's the hoop he had to jump through? The fact of the matter is that right now, the Shimon, right, in our, right, Reuben was the original owner, Shimon was the buyer. Shimon right now wants right now not to be here. In other words, he's just simply not here. Meaning if he were here, Nesina Bar Korcho would work. Just happens to be right now, he's Shelo Befanav. And by him being not only unavailable, but just simply not present, so that could be the obstacle that Hillel had to jump over. And maybe that's exactly the issue. And Aval Befanav, Bein Midato, Bein Shelo Bar Korcho, Avin Matana. Okay, so basically what we just looked at is the following. Here's what we know. We know that the default setting of the Nesina described in our Mishnah would not work. We know that Hillel changed the default setting, making this transaction work. What we're not sure about is what exactly was the failure of the transaction and what Hillel had to modify and adjust. And what the Gemara now has given us is two possibilities. Either one, Nesina Bar Korcho, that by virtue of the fact that he's giving it to somebody else, even though the recipient is not a willing recipient, that would be what Hillel allowed. In general, it doesn't work, but here it does. Or the other possibility is Nesina Shelo Befanav, giving money to a person while he's currently not here. So that's the failure of what it is in general, and that's what Hillel allowed in this circumstance. Just give me a moment. Let me just get through a certain amount of information. Igadami, the Gemara now brings in another version of this discussion. In this other version of the discussion, it's going to basically be the same two points that we made. It's just going to be inverted the way it's presented to us. So here in the second version, we're just starting with the other possibility. That what was the failure of this transaction? The fact that by virtue of the fact that he's not here. The recipient's not here. But had the recipient been here, so then the Nesina would have been good, even though the recipient didn't want the money. And the Gemara says, no, maybe the issue is not Befanav versus Shelo Befanav. Maybe the issue is Dato versus Eino Dato. Meaning maybe the issue over here is that he was just simply unwilling to accept the money, and that's why in general it doesn't work, and that's what Hillel jumped through, so to say, the Chachamim overwrote in terms of why this particular transaction would be a good transaction. Okay. So basically, as we just finished the sugya of the Gemara over here, there is certainly something wrong with the transaction of the person who wants to buy back his house. And so what Hillel allowed the person to do is to buy it back. When I say Hillel, I really mean the Beis Din made a special institution to allow buying back. And right now the Gemara is vacillating between two possibilities of what the general failure of this transaction did and what the Chachamim overwrote. And your two possibilities are either Nesina Bar Korcho, a gift where the recipient does not want to accept the gift. I said the word gift. I'm going to take that word back. All right. Money. Let's keep it right now nice and general. Money that the person wants to give to another person, but the other person does not want to accept it. That is the failure. And what the Chachamim allowed in this particular case is to override it. And again, we understand why. Meaning we want to give Reuven the opportunity to buy back his property. We don't want him to lose that house in perpetuity. And so therefore the Chachamim overrode in that scenario. Or the other possibility, Shelo Befanav. It's just simply by virtue of the fact that he's not here. Had he been here, so he would have to take the money, whether willingly or unwillingly. The issue is just simply that he wasn't here. Okay.
He's not here because he's hiding.
Correct. So that's why Correct. Yeah. Okay. Now, a little more context to this whole discussion. Meaning, I think we can all agree. Somebody comes over to me and says to me, here, I'd like to give you a gift, and I simply say to him, no, thank you. And regardless of whether or not he's insistent that I take it, in other words, if I don't want to take it, so does halacha would ever consider now that I have to take it even against my will? Meaning, I think there's a certain point in time where we can all agree that Nesina Bar Korcho is not going to work. So in other words, there needs to be a little more context to this discussion where the Gemara does entertain that Nesina Bal Karcha would in fact be a good Nesina. Now again, I know there are two considerations of the Gemara over here. But within one of the considerations of the Gemara, so we're saying that Nesina Bal Karcha would in fact work. So it's hard to imagine, it's really hard to understand. So if you take a look at Tosfos, over here, Tosfos, Divra Maskel Midiyetzirich, I'm skipping down about halfway down in the Torah. So the Gemara says, look, if it's a matan, if it's a gift, so I think Tosu says, I think we can all agree, nobody can force a gift on you. Why should I ever be in a position where I have to accept a gift? Even if in this discussion of the Gemara, I were to accept the position of Nesina Bal Karcha would be considered Nesina, but not by a gift. I don't have to accept a gift. Huh? That's right. But the Zachen Ladnu Shalal Befanov means when there's only benefit and there's no downside. The downside of receiving a gift, it's funny. The downside of receiving a gift is a couple of things. One is that if it's a gift that requires care and you know, for those people who win cars, by the way, so now I'm sure they're going to be very grateful for the insurance they're going to have to pay and for the upkeep, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, but I understand, though. Your point is, what if it's a gift that has no upkeep and no care? But there's also a pasuk that says that soni matanos yechia, that somebody who hates gifts is going to have a longer life. So there is this idea that I don't have to be the recipient of get. Zachal adam shel b'fanav, right, the classic example, is going to be where it really is only to my benefit. It does not serve any detriment to me whatsoever. Like, for example, we all do this, and that's Erev Chatzeres, right? In other words, you donated a matzah to our Erev so that we can all carry within the Erev. Now, you didn't actually do it. Somebody did it on your behalf. Notably, the rabbi did it on your behalf. Good. That is a zchus. In other words, that now allows you to carry, allows me to carry. That's zachen la'adam shalom b'fanav. There's literally no downside. Okay. So Tosus says by a gift, Tosus says we can all agree. V'rav papa nami lo palig al zeh, ela b'matana sheish bo tzarech, pligi. Kamo hacha. Over here, we're talking about a matana that also serves a purpose. Da'amar la zigitech amna shetitin limasayim zush, yitzricha kedeh lekayim tanai haget. So, for example, our discussion over here, meaning she doesn't owe the 200 zuz to the husband that she currently wants a divorce from. In other words, the divorce comes with or without the money. But in other words, in her giving this gift, she is now satisfying a condition in order to effectuate the get. So this obviously is a purposeful gift, one that benefits her. So that's the kind of discussion that we're having over here. Ukugon kabal de masisen. And Tosu says like this. Let's say right now, I borrowed money from you, I owe you money back. And for whatever reason right now, you are being belligerent. You don't want to take the money from me. You're standing right here and you don't want to take the money from me. You still want to hold it over my head, whatever the circumstances are. So here Tosu says, I'm going to go in the other direction. Of course, Inesina would work under those circumstances. If I owe the money and I want to pay you back the money I owe, so and you're standing right here, of course you have to take the money. And just because you say I don't want the money doesn't change the nature of the transaction. So basically what Tosfos does is he carves out a Gemara and puts in kind of a sweet spot in terms of if it's just a gift with no benefit to it whatsoever, so then I can't force anybody to accept a gift. If it's an obligation where I owe you the money, and for whatever reason you're just being belligerent, so then for sure I can force you to take the money. In other words, I can put the money down and say, here's my payment. Okay, now please go away. And we're done. And Tosu says, under those circumstances, for sure we're done. The discussion on a Gemara is really in a middle position where it is a gift, but with an understood benefit to the gift. That's how Tosu goes through our discussion. I'll tell you what. Let's all the what ifs. Well, I'm sorry. All the what ifs. Well, let's talk after. I'm just presenting the basic understanding of the Gemara.
When the Torah says what Ben said, when the Torah says that you can get it back your house after a year,
buy it back. You don't get it back. You buy it back.
So everybody can say, I don't want to sell it.
Good.
And they're going against Torah.
So, I mean, why does the Torah...
Hillel had to...
Why does the Torah even have to say that it makes a mitzvah?
Well, I'm not following our discussion right now. The Torah says that the person has the right to buy it back. The person now can make him...
Why does he have to say that?
The person now can make himself unavailable. If the buyer can make himself unavailable. Okay, I don't want to sell it back to you. So Hillel realized now this becomes a problem. So Hillel made a takana. It's really that simple. The only discussion that we're having in the Gemara right now is what exactly was the failure of this transaction that Hillel had to override. And the Gemara offers two possibilities.
So I have to have hide himself. I said, I don't want to sell him.
Okay, good. That's why the Gemara vacillates between.
He has the option to say I'm not selling, and the Torah says you have to give it back.
The Gemara vacillates between two possibilities of why this transaction wouldn't work in general. But again, the Hillel overrode it. But what exactly did Hillel overwrite? So the Gemara gave two possibilities. Either he's not here, or he was unwilling to accept it. One of those two. Okay.
It could happen for anything else.
Land
give back. I'm not giving the land back.
In transactions in general?
Yeah. Yola comes, Shemitah comes.
Let's talk after. I'm ready to discuss it after. Okay. Kol shehu lifnei menachama. We continue now in the Gemara. Lamed beis amad aleph. And now, kol shehu lifnei menachama hareyu kebate arechama. So anything within the wall is going to have the status of bati arechama chutz min asados, except for fields. Rabbi Meir Omer af asados, and Rabbi Meir says even the fields as well. Okay, so the question of what is going to conform to the laws of sales of properties in a walled city, machlokis tanaim, but the machlokis is really a little more limited, meaning that basically there's agreement that it incorporates and includes most everything in the walled city, just the question of sados of fields. What about a house built in the wall? And if, you know, I'm sure we're all thinking about one situation in Tanakh, which the Gemara is going to quote in just a moment. Rav Yehuda Omer, Eino kebate arechama, Rav Shimon Omer, koto hachitzon hu chamasam. So machlokes hatanaim, whether or not that's considered in or outside of the wall. And obviously the question is that it's not in the wall, it's not outside the wall, it's actually built into the wall. So we're going to discuss it as a classic Gemara discussion of where exactly are the limits of the wall of a city. The interior portion, the exterior portion, right? A classic Gemara discussion. Tanur Rabbanan. Ba'isen li'ilah ba'is min ala rabos ba'te ba'dim ba'te mirchatzos megalos v'shofchim m'boros v'sheichin u'ma'aros. The Brisa says that if you read the Pasuk in the Torah says the word ba'is, which means house. Generally speaking, ba'is means a residential house. How do I know that it includes other types of homes even though not built for residence? And we're talking about an olive press and a bathhouse and some sort of tower and a birdhouse and a pit and a cistern and a cave. Tamalamar Ashir Ba'ir. So the Torah says anything in the city. Yachoshani Marba'afa Sados. So one would include even the Sada as well. Tamalamar Ba'is Div Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda does have a limit to what is incorporated in the walled city that falls under the halachas of Bate Arichoma, everything but the field, because the Torah says Asher Ba'ir, I'm sorry, the Torah says Asher Ba'ir is a ribui, but on the other hand, the Torah also says bias. So basically what he does in terms of sets the settings is that it's coming to exclude a field. A field is so far removed from being any kind of structure, so therefore the field is not included. Rabbi Meir Omer Ba'is Ein Li'ela Ba'is Minan LeRabos Ba'te Ba'dim Ba'te Merchatzos Migalos V'Shofchin U'Baru Shechinu Maros V'Afilu Sados Tamalam Asher Ba'ir. Now, as far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, so the Asher Ba'ir includes everything in the city, including even the field. V'Alaksiv Ba'is, okay. But at the same time, however, what is Rabbi Meir going to do with the fact that the Torah says the word Ba'is? Meaning, isn't that there to limit anything? So Amrav Chista, Amrav Ketina, Chulsis Umitsula. So the Gemara says, yes, even according to Rav Meir, there is something excluded, and that's Chulsis Umitsula, Ika Beinayu. Chulsis Umitsula, some sort of sandlot, some sort of quarry, meaning it is a totally purposeless piece of real estate where you can't plant in it, there's no house, there's no usage, there's no utility. It's just basically some sort of quarry. So Chulsis Umitsula. Rav Meir Omer Kabatim, Rav Yehuda Omer Kesados. And the Gemara says that's going to be the machlokes between Rav Meir. I'm sorry, did I skip a little bit? Yeah, I skipped one word. Ika Menel Vatanya, the Gemara here quotes the Brisa supporting this. Chulsis Umitsula, Rav Meir Omer Kabatim, Rav Yehuda Omer Kesados. And so here we have the machlokes between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. Baisa banu bechomer Rav Yehuda amar enu kebate arechoma. What about a house in the wall of a walled city? So a machlokes hatanayim, whether or not it's considered inside the walled city or outside the walled city. I'm Rav Yochanan Mishnei Mekreacha Darshu, and they're both deriving it from the same pasuk v'tori dem bechevel ba'adach alon ki beisa bekir hachoma uvechoma hi yosheves. Good. So the so as we go into Eretz Yisrael and we're ready to now conquer, so two spies are sent out. Those two spies that were sent out to Yericho, so they find a woman living in the wall, Rachav. Okay, we're basically familiar with the storyline. Anyway, we're interested only in one fact over here. We know that she lived in the wall, and the only discussion now is that from the pasuk, can we get any kind of window into whether that house in the wall is considered interior or exterior? So if you read the pasuk carefully, which the Gemara now is going to do, we can actually arrive at either conclusion. Rabbi Shimon Sever Kepashti Dekra. So on one hand, Rabbi Shimon looks at the simplicity of the pasuk. Rabbi Shimon back in the Mishnah says that the Koso Hachitzon Hi Chomaso, that it's the exterior wall which is now going to be the perimeter of the city. Anything inside of the exterior wall is considered in the city. So obviously, a house in the wall is considered a something which is in Bate Arichoma. In fact, if you now go back over the pasuk again, so you see Vatariden bechevel beirach alon. I'm sorry, beadach alon kebisa bekirachoma. Her house is in the kirachoma. So the simple reading of the pasuk would support Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint. What about Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda savra bechoma hi yosheves velo beir choma. So Rabbi Yehuda says that she is sitting in the wall, but not beir choma. So in the wall, but not within the city of the wall. Meaning that the Torah is only telling us the physical makeup of the house that it's in the wall, but in terms of its halachic status, it's not in the city. It's considered external to the city. Okay, so a classic machlokus amongst the Tanaim, where exactly the wall perimeter, the status of being within the wall is going to be. On the interior portion of the wall or the exterior portion of the wall? And obviously the nafka mina being, what if you have a house in the wall? Rachav did. Simple reading of the psukim would support that. That's considered being in the city, but you could deflect. Okay. The Rambam goes like Rabbi Yehuda. Yes. Okay.
Here has to do whether you could be put in within 1 year.
Correct. Oh, meaning once it's considered in a walled city, so then you follow the halachas that we learned in yesterday's daf. If you have a city where it has walls around it, but the walls around it are not a separate wall, it just happens to be that the way the houses are built, the houses basically become the wall. So, Ir Shigago Seah Chomoseah, Vishino Mukefes Choma, Miyamos Yeshua Benun, or let's say it does have a wall around it, but it's a modern wall. It's not one of the classics. And in our discussion, classic means going back to the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. If it goes back to the time of Yehoshua ben Nun, that's considered halakhically a wall. But any wall that's built subsequent to that, not considered a wall vis-a-vis this particular halakha. Einuka bati arechoma, ve'eloin bati arechoma. And so now the Mishnah is going to give us a listing. And the question we're going to deal with for a good part of today's daf is, why the list? So let's go through them. Shalosh chatzeres shel... I'm sorry. Before we get to the list, the Elohim bati arechoma shalosh chatzeres shel shnei bati mukafetz choma miyamos Yehoshua ben Nun. And over here we give a very clear definition of what is considered a walled city. It has to be a walled city in which there are three courtyards. Every one of the courtyards has two houses surrounded by a wall built from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. Okay, so we were just given the specs of what is considered a walled city. Katsra yishena shel tzipori. V'chakra shel gush chalav, v'yudfas hayishana, v'gamla, v'gedur, v'chadid, v'ona, v'yishalayim, v'chein kayotze behem. The Mishnah ends off over here giving us a list of eight cities. Eight cities that are considered to have a wall going back to the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. Now, these eight cities that are listed here in the Mishnah obviously are not exhaustive. Now, the reason why I know that is very simple, because then the Mishnah ends with the words, v'chein kayotze behem, and anything like them. It begs, obviously, the question, so if we're basically giving a sampling of the cities that have that satisfy these specifications that we just identified in the Mishnah, so why would the Mishnah then just mention these particular eight, and what's so special or significant about these eight? We're going to come back to that question momentarily. Tana Rabbanan, we start with the Gemara. We are on the bottom of Lamed Beis Amud Aleph. Choma v'lo shor igar. The word choma in the Torah, in identifying what is considered a walled city, means that it has to be an external wall. If the wall is just simply a composite of the houses that are surrounding the city, and it just happens to be that the nature of the houses is that they form some sort of barrier, that is not considered halachically a wall. A wall has to be something which is independent of the housing. So chomer v'lo shor igar. Saviv, prala tveria. And the wall has to create a full perimeter around the city. Tveria doesn't count. Tveria had a wall going around it, but as we know, Tveria banks on the Kinneret, and so therefore, one quarter of its perimeter does not have a wall, simply because it basically has the water being its barrier. So the Kinneret's not going to count, as it only has a wall going around the non-water portion, three quarters, but not the last quarter. Shiyama Chomosa, its ocean is, not ocean, but its lake is going to be the Choma. And that doesn't count also. Rabbi Lazar bar Yossi Amar Asher lo Choma, afa pishen lo achshav, ahi lo kodem lechein. Rabbi Lazar bar Yossi notes the following. The Pasuk says Asher lo Choma. The word lo in the Torah is a little bit strange. It's spelled Lamed Vav Aleph. Now, what that means to indicate is really a duality. On one hand, it has to have a wall. That's Lamed Vav. On the other hand, Asher lo Choma, Lamed Aleph, means it doesn't have a wall. Well, in other words, that's a duality that's hard to really synthesize. It does have a wall, it doesn't have a wall. Where exactly can we meet in the middle between having a wall and not having a wall? So the solution is actually ingenious. Alpha Pishen Lo Akshav Ayilo Kodem Lachain. It means that it doesn't presently have a wall, but it historically did have a wall. So this would in fact qualify as a walled city. So in other words, a walled city does not necessarily mean that it needs to necessarily have one now. It just simply means that historically I had one going back to the time of Yeshua ben Nun. Okay. Ve'elohim bate arichoma. And these are now going to be the examples of bate arichoma. Tana, gamla begalil, ve'gadud be'evar yardein, ve'chadid, ve'ona, ve'yushalayim be'yehuda. The Gemara quotes the Braisa, and the Braisa over here is very similar to our Mishnah, where it basically goes through a listing of cities. In our Mishnah, I did the count. In our Mishnah, it counted eight cities. In the Braisa that we just quoted, it counted five cities. Okay. And in the Braisa, right, another difference is that in the Braisa, we basically are dividing Israel into three different territories. Meaning, in general, the way the Chachamim looked at Eretz Yisrael is that there's the north, there's the south, and there's Eivor HaYarden, and there's over the Jordan River to the east. And so within these three territories, so what the Braisa did is it identified one city within these territories. Well, at least one city within these territories. Right? If you look, go over the Braisa that we just read together, Gamla is up in the Galil, Gedud is in Eivor HaYarden, and Chadid, Ona, and Yerushalayim are in Yehuda. Okay, so one city in the north, one city in Eivor HaYarden, three cities down in the south in Yehuda. In the Mishnah, we did something similar to that, but not the same. If you look back in the Mishnah, just contrasting the Braisa in the Mishnah, it says Kitzra Yishana Shal Tzipar VeChakra Shal Gush Chalav VeYudfas Yishana VeGamla VeGudud VeChadid VeOna VeYushalayim VeChein Kayotze Behem. So in the Mishnah there were eight cities that were mentioned, and it was not divided into three territories like the Braisa did. Anyway, my Kamar. The Gemara's question over here is whether it be the Mishnah, whether it be the Braisa, what are we doing over here? We're listing cities that had a wall around them. And we know it's not an exhaustive list. We know it's not. The Mishnah says it's not. The Mishnah ended off by saying, V'chein kol chayotze behem. So the question is really simple. What are we doing by listing these cities? Amar Abayis, we're now on the top of Lamed Beis. Lamed Beis. Hachi kamar ad gamla begalal ad gedud be'evar yarden v'chadid v'ona yushalayim b'yehuda. So Abayis says that we're not listing cities over here, but rather what we're doing is we are giving the extremes. We're basically talking about cities up until... And so the cities that are being identified over here are the limits of what is considered Eretz Yisrael vis-a-vis these, the halacha of a walled city. Meaning so that once I have geographical knowledge, and by the way, I'm not saying I do, I don't. But once I have geographical knowledge of where these cities are, so according to Abai, these cities represent now the edge of Eretz Yisrael vis-a-vis these halachas. So Rava Amar, Gamla Begalil, Lafuke Gamla Deshar Ratzos. Rava says no. Rava disagrees with Abai. He says that the purpose of this list over here is not to give us the borders and the perimeters, but rather the purpose of the list over here is that this list is there to try to clear up some confusion. How many gamlas are there? Well, there, and I'm not saying this based on current geography of Eretz Yisrael. I'm saying this based on Rava's understanding of the cities in Eretz Yisrael. So how many gamlas are there? So there are many gamlas. Well, more than one. And so what the purpose of the Braisa is to identify which gamla is it that has a wall around it and historically had one going back to the times of Yehoshua ben Nun. Gamla begalla lafika gamla desharatzos. Gudud beevar yardin lafuke gudud desharatzos. Inach de lo ika kavasai lo itzrich lei. So in other words, these cities are confusing because there are multiple cities in Eretz Yisrael with these names, and that's the purpose of the Braisa, and presumably also the Mishnah as well, to help us clarify the confusion. Oh, there are two gamlas? Oh, no, not that one, but rather that one. Any other city, any other walled city, doesn't need clarification, doesn't need identification, because there's only one of those cities. That's Rava's response. So the Gemara says, okay, but did you notice, though, that of the cities that were listed, one of them was Yerushalayim? So first of all, I mean, the Gemara doesn't even raise this as a question, but I'll just simply point the obvious. It sounds like from Rava's answer that there are two cities by the name of Yerushalayim, at least two cities by the name of Yerushalayim, because Yerushalayim needed the clarification. You know, this Yerushalayim, not that Yerushalayim. Okay, that's what it sounds like from Rava's answer, which obviously is interesting, right? To my knowledge, I don't know of any other city named by that name. Okay. The Gemara is going to be bothered by another very basic question.
There's one in the U.S.
Right, right. So the Gemara is going to be bothered by another one, which is Yerushalayim Michlatba. The Gemara says, I don't understand Yerushalayim. So we're talking about sale of property in Yerushalayim and the permanent nature of the sale if it's not bought back within a year. What are we even talking about? Who owns property in Yerushalayim? And you've heard me say this before, right? Yerushalayim is federal property. Right, it is not divided amongst the Shvatim. Now, not everyone agrees to this, but the Atanya, we have a Braisa. The Gemara over here is quoting a Braisa that we learned together at the end of the seventh parak of Baba Kama, where Asar Dvarim Nemar of Yerushalayim, there are 10 things said regarding Yerushalayim. Some of it have to do with zoning laws, has some of it have to do with property rights, etc., etc. See the end of the seventh parak of Baba Kama for the extensive list of things said regarding Yerushalayim. One of them is Ein Abayit Chalaba. That there is no house over there that will be sold indefinitely. No, but there's no ownership in Yerushalayim. Nobody owns a house, and nobody's selling a house. So the and Rashi over here understands what I mean. I got it from Rashi. Rashi over here understands that basically the reason why is because Yerushalayim is not divided amongst the Shvatim. Yerushalayim is simply federal property, and as such, there's no ownership. Fine. That's the Gemara. And so what the Gemara now is bothered by is, why are we marking off Yerushalayim as, don't worry, it's a walled city going back to the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. It's not divided amongst the Shvatim. Nobody is going to be selling property in Yerushalayim.
That's why the Oiler of Golan, when they came to Oiler Egel, they had the right to
stay wherever they wanted.
Right?
Exactly. Right? So the Gemara is going to give a couple of responses to this question. We'll start off with Rav Yochanan. Am Rav Yochanan ki Yerushalayim de mukefetz choma miyamos Yehoshua ben Nun velo ki Yerushalayim de Yerushalayim en abayis chalaba. So the first answer of Yochanan is Yerushalayim is just used as an example, but not actual Yerushalayim. Actual Yerushalayim, there is not going to be a sale of a house, and no house is going to remain indefinitely with the buyer in perpetuity after he's held it for a year. Meaning Yerushalayim is just an example, but we don't actually mean Yerushalayim. Okay, that's one possibility. Rav Ashi Amar, Lav Amar Rav Yosef, Trei Kadesh Havu, Hachanami Trei Yerushalayim Havu. So Rav Ashi now is going to focus on the observation that I made just moments earlier. Well, you know how we said that there are two Kadeshes? Well, there's also two Yerushalayims as well. And so therefore, when the Braisa was making reference to Yerushalayim, it wasn't talking about the city of Yerushalayim, but it's talking about, you know, the other one. And again.
Is it Shalmala or Mata?
No. He's not speaking any mystical level. There happens to be another city by the name of Yerushalayim, which happens to have a wall around it going back to the time of Yeshua ben Nun. Okay? Only a challenging answer because I don't know any better. Meaning, was there a second Yerushalayim? The Gemara proposes that was a real possibility. Okay. Tanya Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi Lama Manu Chachamim Ezelu. The Gemara quotes a Braisa. Why did the Chachamim count these cities? Kesha'alu b'nei Agola Matzu Eilu v'Kidshim. So because here's what happened. When we came back after 70 years of being in exile, living in Iran for a short 70 years, so we come back to Eretz Yisrael, and Matzu Eilu v'Kidshim. So we found these cities, and we were Mekadosh these cities. Ava Rishonos Bitlu, Mishabitlu Kedushas Haaretz. But you see what happened is that after the first base of Mikdash were destroyed, and after we were exiled, so the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael now went away. And this brings us to one of the more classic discussions that occurs in Shas many times, this being one of the primary places where this topic is discussed. And that is, we know that when Yahushua comes in and conquers Eretz Yisrael, he imbues Eretz Yisrael with a certain amount of Kedusha. We also know that when David sets Yerushalayim up for the building of the Beis HaMikdash, obviously he didn't build it, obviously his son did, but also he imbued a certain amount of sanctity into Yerushalayim as well. And so sanctity goes into the land of Eretz Yisrael and into Yerushalayim, and now, once the sanctity goes in, is that sanctity stay, or is it contingent on our occupation and settlement of Eretz Yisrael? And this becomes now a classic discussion, a classic debate, and here we're seeing it right now. So right now what we're saying is that with the Chorban Beis HaMikdash, so batlu kedusha ta'aretz. And when Ezra comes back in again, he has to reinvest kedusha into Eretz Yisrael and presumably into Yerushalayim. Now part of the complication of this whole discussion is that it could be that kedusha Eretz Yisrael and kedusha Yerushalayim are operating on two different systems, and it gets a little bit fuzzy which of the Kedushas that we're making reference to, the entirety of Eretz Yisrael, or that specific to Yerushalayim. And so, admittedly, that's why the discussion becomes a little bit complicated.
What's the process of giving
Kedushas? Okay, good question. I'm going to come back to that. Okay. So, Badla Mishabadla Kedushas Arts, Kesavra Kedusha Vashana Kishla Shaita Velo Kishla Asiv Lavo. And so the Gemara says, and so that's why the listing of these cities, because these are the cities that when Ezra comes back in from Galus and reinvests with Kedusha, so specifically these cities. The remainder of the Gemara says, okay, that's all well and good. Now, mind you, by the way, the Braisa we just quoted, this is important, the Braisa that we just quoted was said over in the name of Rabbi Yishmael. That's important. Hold that thought. The remainder of the Gemara says, I'm going to be quoting another Braisa. I'm Rabbi Yishmael, but Rabbi Yosef, v'che'elu bovad hayu v'alok v'arnemar shishim ir, kol, chevel, argov, kol elu arim b'tziros. So the Gemara says, these cities and only these cities alone, there are 60 such cities that have walls around them that are fortified. So when the Bnei Gola came up to build the second temple, they found these cities and they invested them in Kedusha. The Gemara says, you're so confusing me. You just told me they don't need to be invested with Kedusha. Kitchum ha'amrin adolo tzarech l'kedushinu. You just told me you don't have to be mekadesh them. Elamanum. So the Gemara says, no, not invested with Kedusha, just simply counted, meaning identified. V'lo elu bavad elu kol shetala lecha mesor biyadecha mi'avetzecha shemekefes chama. Mi'yamos Yoshua benun kol mitzvos halalo noheges bab mimnei shekdusha v'shon akish l'shaisa v'kisha lasid lavo. The Brice over here, espoused by Rabbi Yishmael b'Rabbi Yossi, says clearly, couldn't say any clearer, that the Kedusha that was invested with the Kedusha Rishona remains in Eretz Yisrael, even though we were exiled. And even though we were in Galus for 70 years, when we came back, we didn't have to reinvest it with Kedusha because it is there and remains there permanently. The problem, of course, now is that we have Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi espousing two viewpoints, and they are at odds with one another. The first viewpoint is that the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is low, kitchalas ed lavo, and the second viewpoint is that the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is Kitcha la asid lavo. Now, mind you, by the way, if I can also point out another simple observation that makes this discussion also a little bit more complicated, we are addressing the transition going from Bais Rishon to Bais Sheni. There may be a separate discussion to be had about Bais Sheni and post Bais Sheni. Okay, and it may not, and those two points may not coordinate. Okay, so, and I'm not going to go into any kind of detail now, but just another thing to be sensitive to within this entire discussion. So we have now a theory within the position of Rabbi Shmuel. So the first answer, right? It's not the elegant answer, but the first answer is that we just simply have two different mesoras of what Rabbi Shmuel said. And yes, they are the polar opposites of one another. But okay, that's one possibility. Is that one mesora that we have within Rabbi Shmuel is that the kedusha is eno kishalas elavo, and another version is no kishalas elavo. Okay. And it could be, but this is just speculation. I cannot say I know this. It could very well be that Rabbi Shmuel himself changed his position over the course of his life. And one shear said one thing, and another shear said another thing. That could also be, but that's just speculation. The Gemara says that maybe what we have wrong is that of one of the two statements, it wasn't Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi, but it was rather Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Yossi. And they're both b'Rabbi Yossi, so maybe that was where we got the Masorah wrong. And how do I know that he takes a different viewpoint? The Tanya, Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Yossi, we have a braisa. Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Yossi, Omer asher lo chamaf, api shein lo achshav, v'hu v'haya lo kodem lachein. Even though it doesn't have a wall now, as long as it had a wall previously, the Kedusha remains in that city. My time, the Mandamer Kedusha, v'shon ha-kish l'ashayta v'lo kish l'asir l'ava d'chziv. Now the Gemara over here is going to be looking at a pasuk in Nehemiah to support the position that the Kedusha did not continue. How do I know that? Now remember, the Pesukim that we're reading in Nehemiah is talking about the beginning of Bayis Sheni. And our Aliyah from Bavel, from Paras, back to Eretz Yisrael, and building Bayis Sheni. And really interesting series of Pesukim over here in Sefer Nehemiah. Right? Rashi always has it as Ezra being incorporating both Ezra and Nehemiah. V'yasu b'nei agola ha-shavim min ha-shvi sukos. V'yashu b'sukos. So something wild happened as we came back to Eretz Yisrael. We celebrated this holiday. You heard of it. It's called Sukkos. And then the pasuk says, ki lo asu mi'yemei Yoshua b'nun, kein b'nei Yisrael. You know, we haven't celebrated this holiday since the times of Yoshua. It's a pasuk in Nehemiah. That's a wild pasuk. Yoshua was circa 800 years earlier. In other words, the 400 year, right, approximately 400 years of Mishkan Shiloh, right, it's less, 369, but, and approximately the 410 years of Bayis Rishon, 70 years of exile. Okay, you're looking at upwards of 900 years between Yoshua and our return into Eretz Yisrael to build the second base of Mikdash. And the simple pshat in the pasuk is that we never celebrate Sukkos from Yoshua until the time of Ezra. And the Gemara's reaction, as is all of our reactions, is that can't be. I'm sorry, let me just first finish reading the pasuk Vatisim Chagadola Ma'od, Efshar Ba David Velasa Sukkos Asher Ba Ezra. And the Gemara just succinctly asked the question, it's impossible. Meaning David HaMelech didn't celebrate Sukkos? Meaning, how could that be? Ela Mekish B'Yasam B'Yimei Ezra L'B'Yasam B'Yimei Yeshua. And the purpose of the pasuk over here is not to say that they didn't celebrate Sukkos up until that point in time. That wasn't the issue. The issue over here is that the pasukim in Nehemiah is creating a parallel between Yoshua's entrance into Eretz Yisrael and Ezra and Nehemiah's entrance back to Eretz Yisrael some 900 years later. Ma biyasam bimei Yeshua manu shmitim yovlos v'kachu arechoma af biyasam bimei Ezra manu shmitim yovlos v'kachu arechoma. So what the parallel is there to say is that just like when Yoshua comes in, he kickstarts Shemitah, Yovel, the laws of Bate Arichoma, so too, when Ezra and Nehemiah come back in, same thing. We're kickstarting Shemitah, Yovel, Bate Arichoma, meaning we must invest it with Kedusha. And so every time upon entrance into Eretz Yisrael, so it requires chiddush, it requires a renewal, a reinvestment of the kedusha. Fine. So we have now both psukim in Nehemiah and also a pasuk in Devarim at the end of Sefer Devarim that speak to this idea that the kedusha did not just simply remain even after Churban Bayis Rishon, but rather the kedusha went away, and we need to reinvest it with kedusha. Ben, to your question of reinvestment of kedusha, how exactly that's done? So Rashi over here Rashi over here cites the Gemara in Shavuos. The Gemara in Shavuos, Daf Tet Zayin, right, is that there is a procedure in which you're investing, right, you're investing Kedusha into Eretz Yisrael and into the area of the Beis HaMikdash. See the Gemara over there for the exact nature of the procedure. Now, the Idach, the Bayrachme al Yates, the Idach, okay. Now, all we have done right now is really support the position that the Kedusha did not continue. And when they and the B'nai Gola, when they came back to Eretz Yisrael to build the Bayi Sheni, so they had to reinvest it with Kedusha. All we've been doing now for the last 20 lines of Gemara is support that position. What about the other position? Because we saw Rabbi Shmuel say that there was no need to reinvest it with Kedusha. The Kedusha remains there in perpetuity. So what do you do if you take that other side? What do you do with all those psukim in Nehemiah that we just read? V'idach, debay rachme al yeso davar azara ubatle. V'agin z'chusei alayhu. Ki sukkah. So as far as if you take the other position, so here's how you read the psukim in Nehemiah. There was no need to reinvest Eretz Yisrael with Kedusha. The Kedusha was there, Kedusha didn't go anywhere. And as far as Sukkah and the celebration of Sukkah, all that means is that something amazing happened when we came back to build by Sheni. And that is we did away with the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. Right? As per the Gemara in Yuma, right, Rashi... Same. Anshe Knesset HaGadola are Ezra and Nehemiah. Same. So the right to Rashi over here, I said Yuma, sorry. Rashi over here quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin. I have it in my head that's also in Yuma, but don't trust my memory. Okay. The right, it's Rashi says Sanhedrin Samech Dalet. So the so Anshe Knesset HaGadola and Ezra Nehemiah, so they did away with the Avodah Zarah, with the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. We know the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of our Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. It was too tempting. Nowadays, the Avodah Zarah doesn't speak to us. It doesn't excite us, right? Because exactly that. Because the Yetzer Hara of it was removed. We've discussed this before also. Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah is removed, so everything is balanced. So that means that no more Nevuah, which is why, right, not coincidentally, but I mean it literally, as coincidence, meaning it's concurrent, that with the removal of the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, so then Nevuah is gone as well. Right, for Bayi Sheni, there was no Nevuah. So V'agin Zechus Alai Ki Sukkah. And that's the reference of Sukkah over there. Sukkah just simply means something which protects us. It's Megan. Behind it, the Kapit Krai, Levei Di Yeshua. The Bechol Duch Taksiv Yeshua, V'ach Taksiv Yeshua. And then the Gemara makes such a strong statement. And then the Gemara says, you know what it does? It speaks as a criticism, not that we have any right to do so, but it speaks critically of Yoshua. Yoshua didn't think of this. Yoshua didn't do this. And it sounds like a simple reading of the Gemara is that Yeshua should have done this. He should have removed the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah so that we wouldn't succumb to this. Okay. Bishlam Moshe lo by Rachmed Alav is a chus of Derek Yisrael. So understandable why Moshe didn't ask for Rachmanis and ask for the removal of this Yetzer Hara. He didn't get into Eretz Yisrael. El Yeshua da Havelitz Chusa da Eretz Yisrael Amay Loli by Rachmi. Why didn't Yeshua ask for Rachmanis? V'haksiv Asher Yeshua v'secha v'rishta. So the Gemara says, okay. So you explain the Pesukim in Nehemiah that the Sukkah over here is just simply an allusion to the fact that Ezra, Nehemiah, Anshe Knesset HaGedola was able to remove the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah, and that was Sukkah. Sukkah over there just simply means in the form of protection. Now we have now we're going to be protected from not succumbing to Avodah Zarah. Fine. What about the psukim in Devarim that we quoted? So Hachi Kamar came to Yeshua v'zecha Yerashta At. Since your predecessors inherited the land, you too are going to inherit the land as well. Okay. Let's recap our day today. Okay, we discussed today. Let's call it three sugyas. Sugya number one today was the original owner wanting to buy back his property in the walled city so that it does not remain in perpetuity. And because the buyer makes himself unavailable on the last day of the year, so Hillel made a special takana, allowing him, the original seller, the original owner, to put the money in escrow and be able to collect his land. And the discussion in the Gemara, Hillel obviously made a takana. What hurdle did he have to jump? What was the problem with such a transaction? Two possibilities. Either it was a Nesina Bal Karcha, which is not considered Nesina, or it was Shalom B'Fanav. It's just that he simply wasn't here. One of those two possibilities. And quickly, I spoke at Tosos this morning in terms of giving parameters to this idea of Nesina Bal Karcha, where we clearly know that's not going to be a Nesina, or where it clearly is going to be a Nesina, versus the gray area, which is what we're discussing in our Gemara. The second sugya that we discussed today is being inside of a walled city counts towards which kinds of properties. And basically, most every kind of property that's in within a walled city, machlokas, whether it includes a field as well, machlokas atanayim, and it's based on the darshan of psukim. What about having a house in the wall itself, like Rachav? Unclear whether or not that's considered interior or exterior to the walled city. Our third discussion today was, what exactly are the definitions of a walled city, and which cities in Yerushalayim, or I'm sorry, which cities in Eretz Yisrael are considered walled cities? The Mishnah gives us a listing. The Braisa also gives us a listing as well. What is the purpose of the listing? Because it's non-exhaustive list. The Gemara gives two positions, Abai and Rava. Abai says that we're basically just going over the exterior, the perimeter of how far out we're going within Eretz Yisrael, to the north, to the south, to the east. Rava says no. That these listings over here, because there were multiple names, multiple cities with that share the same names, so the purpose of these listings was just simply to clarify confusion. And then our last topic in today's daf, a huge topic, is whether or not the kedusha that was invested by Yeshua into Yerushalayim and the kedusha of the kedusha that was invested by Yeshua into Eretz Yisrael and the kedusha that was invested by Davin and Shlomo in Yerushalayim, is that kitchel ashaita v'kitchel asid lavo, or kitchel ashaita v'lo kitchel asid lavo, a major machlokas amongst the Tanaim, and we explore defending both positions based on the Pesukim in Nehemiah and the Pesukim in Devarim as well.